Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. My name is Ryan Ballingy. You can email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Follow me on Twitter, @RyanBallingy. You can find our work on golfnewsnet.com as well, on sports.yahoo.com, or the Devil Ball Golf Blog. We've got a great show for you today, I think. We've got plenty to talk about, certainly. Bubba Watson winning the Travelers Championship, Jeff Maggart winning the U.S. Senior Open, Stacey Lewis getting on the bad side of a scoreboard and winding up losing her hometown event, or home state event, at the Walmart Championship in Arkansas. There's a lot to draw on, and then there's that dubious news of rumor, whatever you want to call it, that's been swirling around the golf world, and someone finally said something about it, and we did quietly, but that's not really the point. But Radar Online went public, which is way bigger than we are, and they're kind of an offshoot of the National Enquirer, and went public with the rumor that Tiger Woods and Amanda Duffner, whose maiden name is Amanda Boyd, which I assume that's what she's going by these days, since her and Jason Duffner are now divorced, that they're a thing, and that may be the reason why both of their relationships, her marriage and his relationship with Lindsey Vonn, fizzled out. So maybe we'll touch on that briefly at the end, but I think that I really want to focus in this episode of the program on Bubba Watson, and I think he deserves the time because he's an enigma and in so many ways. And I think it deserves some exploration into why he is who he is, why we don't like him, what we do like about him, and all of those things. So, first, Bubba's incredible. In terms of a golfer, he just doesn't make any sense. And I say that because he's got tremendous touch, and he's a very long hitter. That typically does not work out that way. If you're a long hitter, you are a terrible wedge player. Unless you put in an incredible work. And there are only really two guys in the world that I can think of that I would call a world-class short game player and a long driver of the golf ball. Both those guys just happen to be left-handed. They're Phil Mickelson and Bubba Watson. And I think both of them have, while not similar mechanics, they have similar styles in that it's kind of not long and lazy, long and fast, long and loose. And those are things, that's a style that we've seen over the years tend to result in long golf careers. Just ask Sam Snead, were he alive? Long, slightly speedy, it all kind of works out in your favor over the years, and your longevity seems to extend further into the future than most peers, especially right now where the game of golf is so focused on power that a lot of the biggest players in the world, the most important players in the world, short of Jordan Spieth, who is not on the longer end of the curve, but it's fairly long. That's the focus. You got to be long to be good on the PGA Tour these days, by and large. And Watson is that, and he is that with great wedge play. And for some reason, that does not translate into total domination. Because a guy with his length, the way he is able to drive the golf ball, and not just do it long, hit it long, bubble long, he's very accurate, and he can hit pretty much any kind of shot he prefers off the tee. I mean, obviously he prefers the cut, but he can hit any shot he imagines because he's got these incredible hands, and that's the gift that Mickelson and Watson share that so many players with great power lack. They have strength. They've got great core. They've got strong legs. They've got a swing where they literally jump at the ball, and it goes a long way. That's really not the case. I mean, Watson's feet leave the ground to an extent, but they don't like jump up. It's a little bit more of a throwback swing. It feels certainly not that way, but they use their wrists and their arm strength, and frankly the strength that comes from having long arms because they're taller guys, so well, and it leads to these massive drives and sets up situations where you're hitting short irons into most every hole that you play, and that's why these guys, Watson and Mickelson, had to become so good as wedge players, because if you weren't a good wedge player, you would never score. It would be incredibly frustrating. And the other part that Watson has worked on in the last couple of years, especially this year, he's seen a big improvement in strokes gained putting, because he has typically been a very substandard putter. And that is really what explains why he doesn't win more often. He's got 8 PGA Tour wins. He said his career goal is 10 with how difficult it is to win on the PGA Tour these days. He's got 8, and he's done it being mostly a terrible putter. He gets himself fairly close, and you can make the 7 to 10 footers. Most pros can do that half the time with their eyes closed. But He's not a very good mid-length putter. He's not a good leg putter whatsoever. And that's why he has to be good with a wedge, because he's got to put it close, because he's not going to make it otherwise. So when he's off with the wedges, when he's off with the short irons, he doesn't perform all that well. That's just the physical aspect of it. Then there's the mental aspect of it, where this is the big block between Watson winning more than 8 times in his career, winning 8 times in his career. Instead of being a guy that's got 15 or 16 or 17 wins at this point and maybe being the number one player in the world, or at least consistently a part of that conversation and consistently contending in major championships, it's the mental block. It is his mental, is how he perceives golf. It's how he perceives himself. It's how his attitude manifests itself in a golf tournament. Thank God he has Ted Scott. And I know we joke all the time on Twitter, hashtag pray for Ted Scott, and that Ted Scott gets a lot of bad things coming his way from his player. But were it not for Ted Scott and his wife Angie, I am 100% convinced that Bubba Watson would have flamed out in 2 years on the PGA Tour. He never would have won a Masters, much less 2 Masters. And I don't think he would have turned into the guy that he is evolving into, at least as a person. I mean, he seems like he's a solid dad. Obviously, we're not around his kids. We have no freaking clue. And we don't know these guys. We don't know them personally. So I am reluctant to reach into that comparison, especially after what we've learned about Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson in the last week. But it seems like Ted Scott has this tremendous influence over Watson, at least the best influence someone other than Watson has over himself, to get him into the right frame of mind, to keep him calm when things go wrong or things don't suit his eye in play, and rope him in and get him to the finish line. Ted Scott's great at that. He deserves a ton of credit for that. Watson obviously is the artist, the musician, whatever. He's making those things happen. But you need a muse. You need someone who's going to keep you in the right frame of mind. I truly believe that's Ted Scott. The problem for Watson isn't really so much in round. I mean, that happens where he lays it out on Ted or gets mad about a club selection or a bad shot he hit or whatever, goes into this kind of gloom and doom where he's got a poor attitude. But what's really, he sets himself up for failure at the start of tournaments like the Open Championship, like the U.S. Open. I mean, going into the U.S. Open, you pretty much knew he had no shot to win because he wasn't going to like the course. He wasn't going to like weird and different. Bubba Watson likes familiar and easy, fairly easy, that things that appeal to his talent level. And that was not Chambers Bay. So you knew he psyched himself out before he ever got on the first tee. And while he did give a pre-tournament news conference, he didn't come out and say, well, this course is too hard for me, I'm going to lose, like he does every year at the U.S. Open. You knew he had that track record. And you knew that he didn't like USGA setups. You knew he didn't much care for the U.S. Open. You knew that style of golf didn't work for him. He doesn't like a grinding style of golf. He's not very patient. Likes to be aggressive. Likes to have fun on the course. Can't do those things. He hates it. He hates slow pace of play. That's also the U.S. Open because it's hard to score. So you have 5.5 hour rounds in rounds 1 and 2. He hates those things. All of those things line up against him, but because he hasn't evolved mentally to the point where he just compartmentalizes those things, forgets about them, and addresses them after the round or before the round or whatever, and just plays golf and immerses himself in that, he defeats himself before he gets to the first tee. He was done before he started. I was standing in the middle of the 18th fairway with him when he said, oh, that's pathetic professional golf, when he had to wait so long to hit a shot. Hit a terrible shot and then gave a nonchalant 3-putt, and that was the end. And he was just kind of walked away. And I was like, all right, we're out of here. And he's going to move on to the Open Championship, and if it's windy, he's going to hate it. He hates it. He will hate the wind. And it won't be fun for him, and he'll miss the cut, or he'll make the cut and place 50th or something. And I think that Watson is wasting his talent. He's wasting what he is capable of doing. And I really do believe he's the kind of guy that were he to apply himself, he could win 4 or 5 times a year without really trying all that hard. And especially with the improvements we've seen in his putting, if they're long-standing and they last beyond this year, then he has no excuse to win any less than 3 PGA Tour events every year. 4 or 5 is great for any year, but He has the kind of length. He's a 36-year-old man. He's got the kind of length that's going to last, like Phil Mickelson's, for basically the next decade. And he can be competitive with that length and that creativity and that short game until he's about 45 years old. So that's something in the area of 200 PGA Tour starts. He should be able to win 10% of them. He's that good. He's that powerful. He's that creative. He's got that skill set. He should walk away from the PGA Tour with 30 wins, or darn close to that. And he could win a couple of other majors, not just the Masters. He can win another Masters. He could probably win an Open Championship, and I know he could win a PGA Championship. He's gotten himself close at the venue where we're going in August for the PGA Championship, Whistling Straits. So I think the challenge for Watson, now that he is a dad twice over, that he's won 8 times on the PGA Tour, that he's got the money, he's got the lifestyle, he's got all those things that a guy that's on the upper echelon of the sport has earned, he needs to take it and go that extra mile. And that extra mile isn't doing anything different from his golf game except his mental approach. And he needs to figure out a way to be cool with what's ever thrown his way. And if he's not, then he's always going to be this guy that we go, man, I just wish he would apply himself, that he would get over whatever he's mad about now and stop relying, you know, don't be a social media maven. Who cares about periscoping, which is his new thing of late, apparently. And figure out how to like, or at least deal with, the things you don't like. And I think that this is going to go down a very psychoanalytical path. But Watson has a tendency, as I've said, to not like things that are different to what he likes. And that applies throughout his entire life. That has to do with his religion. He doesn't really care for folks who don't have the same religious values that he does, the same way of practicing religion. I think that makes him uncomfortable when people challenge him on that, as Shane Ryan's book did. And maybe Shane went a little far on that, but I think you've got to take a strong stance if you're writing a book, so I understand where he's coming from there. It also seems to apply in his value system, where he's happy to tell you that he is not a fan of gay marriage, that he thinks homosexuality is a sin, not the person, but the act itself. I don't know how you can distinguish between the two. A different topic for a different day. Doesn't really care for that. He does not want to be challenged. He wants the easy path. And I think that tells you something about his ability to use his talent. He's applying it in easy ways. He's won the Travelers twice. I'm not saying the Travelers is an easy tournament to win, but it's an easy course for him, and it suits his eye extremely well. That's why he likes playing it. That's why he's always in contention there. And when he's not in contention there, it's because he's just not, you know, something's off. But, I mean, pretty much every year that he's played since 2010, he's been a factor and had a chance to win. That's a pretty cool thing, to have that kind of reliability. You look at other places where he tends to play well. Obviously, Augusta National is one of those places. He's a horse for a course in a lot of places. And then where it doesn't suit him or it's not something that's normal, he hates it. It's not going to work for him. No, thank you. Too hard for me. Goodbye. And it's not too hard for him. And we've all seen him be able to do incredible things. So that not that Bubba Watson gives two craps about what I have to say about him, but I think if he embraces this mental challenge at this stage of his life, and he decides to try and figure out how to get over the things he doesn't like professionally, I don't care what you do personally, but get over the things professionally that you don't like, embrace them or learn to like them, he would do so much better. He would be the number one player in the world. And I truly believe that. He would be the number one player in the world. No doubt in my mind. Fortunately, that's not the case. And I think golf suffers because of it. And I think Watson has said, after his second Masters win, he didn't really care to be, after the first Masters win, an ambassador for the sport. And he soundly rejected it the second time, to say, "I that is not my place. I don't want to be an ambassador. I just want to be 2-time Masters champion Bubba Watson. I don't want anything extra with that. I don't want to do anything extra with that." And I think a lot of people walked away disappointed from that. But I think now, a couple of years removed from that, he is now in a situation where he seems a little bit more comfortable with who he is. And that he is a little difficult to get along with. That he is kind of hard to like at times. And then at other times he does things that just don't make sense with the way he acts the rest of the time. And that in a good way. And that he's cool with that. And I think he realizes he is a marginalizing figure. He can very quickly get turned, can turn people against him. Just the way that he acts, the way that he is. And that the way he acted in the final round, on the second hole, over on the rough from 100 yards out, with the sand wedge in his hand, and the fan goes, "You should have punched four iron like a dumbass," which was completely wrong, because even you and me would hit a sand wedge or a pitching wedge from 100 yards from that lie, probably still at the green. Maybe not to 3 feet like Bubba did, but he embraced that and had no problem turning to the guy and be like, "That's where you're on that side of the ropes, dummy." And then when he hit the shot, he looked for him again. And that's a brash thing to do, and in the certain context, it probably sounds really terrible to do, to kind of give the business to somebody in your gallery that's taking time out of their week, their day, whatever, to watch you play golf. But that's the Bubba that embraces Bubba. That's the Bubba who's like, "I'm me, you're you, and I'm not going to apologize for being me." Now, that may turn people off, but I think in the long run, if he embraces that as well, that his personality is what it is, and he's not going to change, and it's take it or leave it, I think there's a respect factor that comes with that. I respect people who are who they are and are fine with that. And they accept their flaws. They're not masking them. They're not trying to make them something that they're not. And they try to do what they can to enhance and excel at the things that they like and the things that they're good at and things that make them the best of them. And they allow the bad things to be out there, but that they don't try to dwell on them. I know I just talked about Bubba trying to advance personally or professionally in terms of embracing the things that he doesn't like. And I think everybody should be always striving for personal growth. You got to get better as a person. Otherwise, why the hell are you here? But I think that they can kind of coexist. That if Bubba is decided, "I am who I am and I'm not going to change and I like me," then that's your personal, finish line. If you've reached that, there's still another finish line out there, professionally speaking, where you can evolve and grow and get better. So that would be my challenge to Bubba Watson, is just get it together, professionally speaking, and stop whining. Stop emoting about long drive contests and rainy conditions and hard golf courses, firm golf courses, wind, being in France, being in Scotland, not being where he wants to, all of those things. And just step back for a second and go, I have 10 years, and I really do believe he has 10 years to be the best golfer he can be and make a long-lasting impression on this sport. And I got to do it. I got to start today. If he does that, I think he could win a lot of people back, even if they don't like him personally. And I think that's the way Tiger Woods operated. I don't know that people necessarily ever liked Tiger Woods personally. If you did, I don't know what you were assessing. But people love Tiger Woods because of the competitor that he is, and that he always sought excellence and to improve himself. Despite what Brandel Chamblee tells you about the breaking down and building up of swings, I think that endeared him to people, because they saw that he was clearly the best player in the world. He said, no, I can do better. I can be better. And I'm going to do it. I'm going to try it. And it may not work. It didn't really work with Foley. It kind of worked. It's not really working so far with Chris Como, but I know it hasn't worked with Chris Como, but he said, "This is my mission. I'm going to get better, and I'm not going to stop trying to get better just because I've reached a certain plateau or a certain status." Watson embraces that. He says, "I'm not going to plateau. I'm not going to stop. I'm going to get better." People will love that. People will love him for it, because it won't have been him squandering an incredible, once-in-a-lifetime kind of talent. So I hope that he doesn't do that. All right, so let's take a quick break here and talk about the U.S. Senior Open for a moment. And really, I'm not going to talk about the U.S. Senior Open too much, but it's going to get into a Jeff Maggard story. So first, congratulations to Jeff Maggard. Wins a second senior major this year. He finally gets an Open. I know it's not the U.S. Open, which he was basically a part of on the final day for half a decade in the 90s and in the 2000s. And he probably should have gotten one in there somewhere, but he didn't. So the U.S. Senior Open is as close of an opportunity for him as it is to get that feeling, to get that chance. So for him to do that, especially over guys like Colin Montgomery, Bernhard Langer, I mean, you had a great leaderboard there on Sunday at Del Paso in Sacramento. I think that was wonderful, and I thought it was a cool moment for him. And for whatever reason, I think Maggard and Montgomery are very similar in this regard, that those were guys who had, they didn't have the highest talent level in the world, but they had the ability to win golf tournaments, and for whatever reason, they never could get over that hump in a major championship and really take it to the next level. They just didn't, they couldn't do it for whatever reason. And now that they're both on the Champions Tour, they're kind of freed up. It's free money most weeks, so you don't have to worry about paycheck or stability. There are less guys. It's just more easygoing. There's not much attention or pressure. So just play, baby. And those guys are really shining because of it. That's cool for Jeff Maggard because he wins the U.S. Senior Open. He gets to play the U.S. Open next year at Oakmont, the hardest freaking golf course on the planet. But he's in the Open next year, which is pretty awesome. And Montgomery was wonderful over the first couple of days and hung in there at the Open at Chambers Bay. So the senior guys can still get it around. And the golf course at Oakmont will not be too long for Maggard to be able to get around. It'll be firm and fast, so he can do that. I think that's pretty cool. Now, let me tell you a story about Jeff Maggard very briefly. And it doesn't really involve him. More about me, but he's there. So let's tell. So 3 years ago at the 2012 Fries.com Open, I'm covering it because Tiger Woods decides to play to placate Fred Couples, and so he could get on the President's Cup team. And I'm sorry, the 2011 Fries.com Open, so he can get onto that and play Fred Couples, get on the team, blah, blah, blah. And one night, go out to this restaurant in the area around, I think it's called, San Martin or whatever, California, near the Court of Alvarez Resort. And I'm going to dinner, and I'm just looking for a place to eat at a bar, just me. Pull up to a nice little steak place, walk in, take a seat, and there are a couple of women seated to my left, and they're kind of just drinking, and I grab whatever off the menu, and I see Jeff Maggard is the other end. I don't know him. He doesn't know me, you know, personally. And I'm like, okay, so Maggard's here. Fine. He was just kind of marginal. I think he made the cut that week. He may not have, but you know, I eat my dinner, and now I'm starting to talk to this woman who's next to me because I just like to talk to people. And she's having a fun night with her friend. And she's probably 45 or 50, I'm going to guess, in there. I could be completely wrong, but I think 45 or 50. And somehow it gets into this conversation that she is some kind of psychic mind reader thing. And, oh, God, it was awkward. And at one point, she is trying to perform a palm reading on my hand. And she's like, you know, pointing out marks on my hand, lines on my hand, and telling me, you know, this can mean this, and this can mean this, and these come together, and this can mean this, and I certainly do not believe in any of that as anything other than hocus pocus BS. And at one point, I was kind of getting exasperated, but she is kind of, you know, you got to play those things carefully when there's alcohol involved and all that stuff. You got to play it carefully. You got to get out, extricate yourself. You got to do it carefully. And at one point, I looked up, and I looked over toward Maggard, and he looked at me and just shook his head and smiled. And he knew I was in trouble. And he didn't do anything to save me, and I didn't need him to save me. I got myself out of there, no problem, and got myself a milkshake at McDonald's to alleviate the experience. But it was just a funny place, right time. There's Jeff Maggard to see it. So I'm sure he saw and experienced a lot of that crap in his years on tour. I mean, he's been playing professional golf for 30 years. I'm sure he's had that plenty of times happen to him, even though he's a happily married guy and has a couple kids. But strange things happen in professional golf. People are strange, and Jeff Maggard was there for one of the stranger experiences for me covering golf on the road. One last thing, we'll talk about this for about 90 seconds, and then we'll get out of here. And that is the rumor that Tiger Woods and Amanda Duffner / Amanda Boyd are an item. That rumor was going around Chambers Bay pretty hotly during US Open week, and it's been out there, I think, for a little while now. Obviously, as I mentioned on Twitter, I've covered a major championship. I haven't covered a road tournament in over 3 years. I haven't covered a major championship in 4. So, you know, I'm not on the beat every week, so I don't know how long this rumor has been out there. But it is, it has been, and now Radar Online has put it out there as fact. You know, they're hooking up, and this is something that led to the deterioration of her marriage with Jason Duffner and Woods' relationship with Lindsey Vonn, and you know, they can't just get enough of each other, and she got flown in from Alabama to Seattle ahead of the U.S. Open, so I guess they could hook up for a couple days or something, and you know, Jason's furious and can't believe it, and the Tiger's following the footsteps of Tom Watson, who cheated on his wife with someone, other player's wife, and then they got married, and oh, that wasn't so good, and all this stuff. I have no idea if any of this is true. Rumors like these tend to not come out of thin air, and I'm telling you that Radar Online's source is not out of thin air, whoever it is, because it's a rumor that's been out there for a while. Now, they may have made up literally every quote in those articles, which is probably what they tend to do, but a lot of these things have some basis in truth. Rumors that you tend to hear about, especially in golf, there's some basis in truth. That's not to say that this is true. I'm just telling you that as a blanket statement, that is how it kind of works. The sport is too small, too incestuous to not talk about itself with each other and to not have quite a rumor mill. That all said, we will probably never hear about this unless, for some reason, they actually become a couple and start dating. We will never hear about this from either of them. So, actually, Amanda Duffner might say something because she has a propensity to speak her mind, which make her into a little bit of trouble here and there, but I think we like that about her. So, to sum up, who the hell knows, but people care, and you can see it in the web traffic numbers. So, we'll keep you updated, I guess, if someone tells us that they're not, or whatever. We'll figure it all out. All right, next week on the show, we're going to go over this week's event at Greenbrier. We'll get you set for the John Deere Classic. Maybe we'll spend a few minutes debating whether or not Jordan Spieth should play the John Deere Classic, stick with his plan to keep his commitment, and then go over to the Open Championship at St. Andrews. Or it doesn't make sense that he should go over there, get over the time change, get used to open golf and all that jazz. We'll talk about that a little bit next week. And then we'll get into any other things that kind of pop to mind over the course of the next 7 days. You can email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Follow me on Twitter, @RyanBallenge. Follow facebook.com/golfnewsnet for Golf News Net on Facebook. And follow facebook.com/devilballgolf for Yahoo's Devil Ball Golf Club. Till next week, I'm Ryan Ballenge saying thank you for listening. And we'll see you next week.